Hello, I'm Amanda McNulty with Clemson Extension and Making It Grow, and this is a Making It Grow Extra, one of our podcasts where we hope you'll learn something interesting. And I am really, really, really excited today. We have been in Lancaster doing an interview with Nancy Basket of Cherokee Heritage, who's a sculptor, in my opinion, although she is a basket maker, but she's an artist. But I've been in South Carolina my whole life. I'm 69 now. This is March of 2020, and I did not know about the remarkable program at USC Lancaster of Native American Studies. So I'm here to talk with Dr. Stephen Criswell, who is the director of the Native Studies Department here at USC Lancaster. So tell me, Stephen, how did the college, it's been here about 60 years, mm-hmm, I guess, mm-hmm, and how did the Native American Studies Department become in existence?
Well, yeah, the university is celebrating its 60th anniversary this year. I was brought down about, I think in the fall, it'd be 15 years that I've been here. I was teaching down at Benedict College in Columbia. I'm a folklorist by background. And I had worked with the Catawba Indians some because their pottery tradition, which we can talk a little bit more about, hopefully, their pottery tradition is sort of casebook classic folk art. I mean, the way it's transmitted, the way it's learned, the way it's made, it's the sort of thing that I studied in
graduate school. Not academically directed.
Right, right. That, yeah, it's in the community. It's taught by face-to-face interaction, all that sort of thing. And it was just the exact sort of thing I'd been studying in graduate school. And so I'm originally from Gaston County, North Carolina, so just right across the,
sure,
river. And so I grew up knowing the Catawba Indians and knowing a little bit about them, but it wasn't till I went to graduate school and came back that I really learned, developed an appreciation for Catawba culture, and particularly their pottery traditions. And so I had worked with a few potters because I was part of a statewide folklore organization at the time. And the dean of USC Lancaster asked me to come up. Actually, my friend Fran Gardner, who's an art professor here, Fran said, our dean wants to talk to you because we just recently acquired an archive collected by Thomas J. Bloomer, who's a longtime lay researcher of the Catawbas, great compiler of information and collector of pottery. And the university had gotten his research collection.
Ooh.
And I was asked to come up and talk with the dean about it. And I thought I was coming up to advise them on maybe organizing a conference around it, or, you know, something they might could do with it. And as I'm in this meeting with the dean, he starts asking me about my salary, which I thought was an odd question, and then realized I was in a job interview, which, you know, it was the most relaxed job interview I've ever had.
Wonderful. I bet you made a good impression.
I can't recall because I didn't really pay that much attention. I thought I was just visiting. But I was brought on in 2005 initially to start a Catawba Studies program.
Oh.
And as we started looking at what had been done in the state, and as I said, as a folklorist, my background was in Southern and particularly Carolina cultural traditions. So,
all right,
while I was familiar with the Catawba and some other Native groups in the region, it wasn't something I'd spent a lot of time on at that point.
And for our listeners who may not be familiar with the Catawbas, who may have just recently come to South Carolina, they are concentrated in the Rock Hill area.
They're about midway between us, our campus, and downtown Rock Hill.
All right, thank you.
And you know, they've been there for thousands and thousands of years. They've been making pottery for thousands of years, and they're the only federally recognized Native American group in South Carolina.
Oh.
That we have other tribal groups that are recognized by the state government.
Oh.
It's difficult to get federal recognition. You have to prove that you've been in this particular place for, you know,
thousands of years.
So
you thought you were going to maybe direct that. You came thinking to direct that Catawba
project. And as we looked around, we realized that there was almost nothing that had been done in terms of an academic program, a program of study looking at Native history and culture in this region. Unfortunately, there are very few Native American focused courses in any of our institutions of higher education, whether it's USC or Clemson or Furman or wherever it might be, private or public. There's just not a lot of attention there hasn't been a lot of attention paid
within South Carolina.
Within South Carolina, attention paid to Native Americans. And that's unfortunate because you know, as one of the main points of contact between Europeans and Native people, and then later African Americans through enslavement with the Port of Charleston, you know, you have those three groups that make up South Carolina, that make up our history and culture. You know, and of course, other groups have come in and over time, and there are pockets of different ethnic groups, but the main ones have been Black, White, Native mm-hmm. groups. And I think, you know, I've always said to understand what it means to be a South Carolinian, what it means to be a Southerner in some ways, you have to know the history of these groups, particularly Native American, African American, European American. I mean, that's whether you're ethnically that mix of people or just one of those, your culture, the culture here is made up of those.
The interactions between those and the dominations tensions and all is what has created where we are now.
Right. There have been and still are Native communities all around the state that were smaller, mm-hmm. More insular groups that have maintained their Native identity. Sometimes I think there may have been generations that weren't even aware the sort of thing where, you know, for a long time in different parts of the state, you could live and die and get married, have children, live your whole life in your community. You didn't have to go very far at all. And so you didn't encounter a lot of people, a mm-hmm. lot of different people. You encountered your own people and,
They didn't seem odd to you.
Right. Yeah. But the world's gotten smaller. And I'd say, you know, 50, 60 years ago, sure. these community people in these communities started going out and going off to college, getting new jobs. You couldn't make a living as a farmer the way you used to be able to. And I think they started encountering other people, other cultures, and thought, you don't do that? Uh-huh. We do that. You know, and it's sort of, I don't think it's a coincidence that we see this movement of social, cultural, political activism, I guess, among Native people in South Carolina. You know, we see that about 40, 50 years ago. And it's still going on, and these groups are really embracing their Native identity. And some of them are biracial and triracial, but they celebrate that Native identity. And I wasn't terribly aware of a lot of these groups when I first started here, and it's been a learning experience. But one of the first things I realized was, we can't just focus on the Catawba. The Catawba are extremely important.
So therefore,
history,
Native American.
But really, there's nothing. And you have to go. You know, you have to go up to Cherokee in Western Carolina to find another similar program. But they're focused more on the Cherokees. Mm-hmm. The UNC Pembroke has Native American studies programs, but they're more focused on the Lumbee in North Carolina. And there was just a gap here in the state. Right. And we thought we would work to try to
because you are very close to them.
Yeah, we're close mm-hmm. to the Catawba, but we're also not
that far.
And
then you've got that collection.
Yes,
y'all purchased the collection.
Well,
I believe.
So getting back to our history, we started with the Thomas J. Bloomer Research Collection,
and that was documents and pottery.
No, that was just documents.
Just documents at that time. Okay.
Primary and secondary materials, oral histories that he had done, interviews, right. and so forth, but also. He had compiled research materials, you know, anything
with the Catawbas,
right? Anything having to do with Catawba, because
right.
Dr. Bloomer worked at the Library of Congress. He had a PhD in English and Old English, oddly enough. But so he had the research
okay.
skills to find this information and bring it together, and he put together this very valuable collection of materials, and that was I believe a donation. And about a year or so after I started, Brent Bergen, our archivist, was hired to sort through this. And he tells stories about things being in old liquor boxes and just, you know, scattershot. But he has worked diligently to create a very well-organized collection of very valuable materials. But so Brent came on and started the archival work. And about a year after I'd been working here, we hired Chris Judge as the assistant director of Native American Studies. And Chris is a archaeologist,
yes.
very well-known, well-respected around the state, and very has a great reputation among the Native communities. And he's worked with a lot of these non-Catawba groups.
Oh.
And so he brought that knowledge with him as well, which was mm-hmm. really helpful to us.
Because you do want to, in any way possible, include them when you can.
Right, and we've done that. The first year, so we've had a Native American Studies Week every year for this coming, in about 2 weeks or week and a half, we'll have our 15th annual Native American Studies Week. And we started this again. The first year we were in 2006, we were going to have a Catawba Studies Day.
Sure.
And then it became a Native American Studies Day. And then we started inviting people and looking at what we might do and say, and it became a week of events. And the first year we invited some scholars down from different universities and so forth to talk about developing an academic program. But the second year we invited tribal leaders from all over the state. Including,
my goodness, going to the source.
Yeah. And including the Catawba, but also the Beaver Creek, who are down in Sally, South Carolina.
Yes, in Sally.
At the time, particularly, there were a few PD groups, uh-huh, mostly in the eastern part of the state. The Cherokees, the historic Cherokees of the upper, you know, there's that corner of South Carolina, up toward the mountains that were once Cherokee lands. And there are groups, there's the Wassamasal group in Varnertown, who are out near Monk's Corner, the Edisto, who are a little further down on the East Coast. But we brought these tribal leaders together to show them what we were hoping to do and to get their input and get their advice. And one of the things I remember well is Chief Gene Norris, who passed away just a little while ago. But Gene was the chief of the Piedmont American Indian Association, that are also known as the South Carolina Cherokee.
All right.
And he got up and was saying, Chief Norris was saying that he was lamenting that they were left out of the history books. Oh. Not just his people, but Native people, particularly in South Carolina history. You get a brief introduction to the Catawba, the Yemassee War, and I think the Cherokees, and nobody else is mentioned. And I replied to him after that. I said, Chief, the person to tell your story is you. And what we want to do is to provide you with a vehicle for sharing that story. And whatever we can do to tell your story, to tell your history, to share your culture with folks outside of your community, that's what we want to do. And I think that's what we've been very successful at. But, I mean, I just wanted to get back to the folks here. So we brought in Chris Judge. Shortly afterwards, we hired Claudia Heineman Priest. And Claudia is one of the only, if not the only, linguists studying the Catawba language. She worked with the Catawba Nation years ago to help them sort of recover, revitalize their language. The last speakers of Catawba, people who grew up speaking Catawba, passed away in 1959, 1960.
And had not been recorded, I believe.
Part of what she had done over the years was to find those recordings.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are pieces here, snatches here, and she worked with the Catawba Cultural Center in Winona Hare there to construct a dictionary of the language, grammar.
Uh-huh.
They decided how they were going to, what sort of script they would use for the language, because it was never a written language.
Of course,
language.
Yes.
And so she was instrumental in helping to revitalize the language and recover the language. And she came on to teach English for us, and she's actually working on her PhD now, and we're hoping soon that she will be Dr. Heineman Priest.
Yes, of course.
And we'll have the opportunity to teach Catawba as a language for students. Maybe, well, I won't say as a foreign language, but as a language that students could take to fulfill a language requirement. We also had Brittany Taylor Driggers, she's a wonderful artist, but also just a gifted curator. And she, when I was first hired, she was actually my student assistant. She was in graduate school at the time, but she was still in the area. And she has since gotten her MFA and has gone on to become a art professor here.
Well, let's talk
a
little bit about
our galleries.
Galleries, because you're not on the main campus.
Right.
You're right downtown. And I think that, like a lot of southern towns, they were deteriorating.
Yeah.
And y'all wanted to find ways to revitalize and get people back downtown.
Yeah, so there was a conversation between our dean at the time, John Catalano, and the city manager of Lancaster. I think at the time they were talking about maybe offering some health services classes downtown, and they couldn't quite figure out what to do. But the city at that point was looking to revitalize downtown, because we'd gotten a lot of bad press. Forbes magazine called us, one of the most threatened towns in America.
Oh my word.
During it must have been the primary of 2000 and must've been 2008, might've been earlier, but CNN came in and did a story and basically said we were a town of fast food restaurants and trailer parks and all sorts of things. And there was a backlash in the community. We all sort of stood up and said, no.
We're proud of our community.
Right. And we started this campaign to sort of promote Lancaster and revitalize our downtown. And, the city manager found out that at that point we had acquired Thomas Bloomer's pottery collection.
Which is incredibly
substantial. Yeah, I believe it was 1,300 pieces at the time.
Very important.
Yeah, and Tom had been collecting for decades. And Lindsay Pettis, who recently passed away, but Mr. Pettis worked in real estate here in the area and was a prominent figure in the community and was very much devoted to the history and culture of this area. And he knew that the pottery, much of it, the clay for the pottery, was harvested from the Lancaster County side of the Catawba River. And so he knew that Tom had this pottery collection. He was looking to sell it. He didn't want it to get broken up in different museums or whatever. And Lindsay always said he wanted the pottery to come home.
Because this is where it was mined. This was its foundation.
And so he bought the collection and he put it in storage and kind of held on to it for a little while because I think he was waiting to see what we would do. Mm-hmm. And I think we got to a point where he felt comfortable with us and arranged to sell us the collection at a very, very reasonable price. And also donated a lot of additional pieces. And so we had this collection of... More than a thousand pieces. Yeah. But at the time, it was just in closets and empty spaces all over the campus because we didn't have really an area to display it. We had a small display area, but that was about it. But I was in my office one day, and it was, this must be going back about 7 or 8 years. I got a call, and I picked it up, and it was our dean, Catalano. And at least with me, he was never one with, hi, how are you? I pick up the phone, and what I hear is, Criswell, you want a building? And I said, yeah, sure. What for? And he explained to me that the city, he and the city manager had figured out that bringing our collection downtown
would bring people
and creating,
downtown.
Yeah, an area where we could exhibit this material would be an attraction. And as we developed it, we came up with the idea of having not just exhibits and galleries, but having labs and offices and classrooms and so forth. And the city of Lancaster took this building. This was right here in the heart of downtown. This was a furniture store, I think, and department store. And it was renovated in a very short period of time. They did amazing work.
Beautiful
and
building.
Got the asbestos out, all of that sort of thing. Created the floor. I don't know if you've noticed the floor.
But I have.
It's designed to look like a riverbed. Mm-hmm. But, and as you go through the building, it sort of circles
the Catawba River.
Yeah, it's the Catawba River. And so we moved into here, during the time that we've been here, we've seen a number of businesses, successful businesses pop up. As you know, we have a barbecue place next door, 521 Barbecue.
I enjoyed that.
Which you got to enjoy lunch there. The craft beer stand, the craft stand across the street keeps getting voted the number one craft beer stand in South Carolina.
Good heavens.
And it's
Well, it's Friday afternoon. We'll have to find
out. I'm sure there's a crowd there already. And we're seeing this slow but steady
because you're anchoring.
Yeah. And I don't want to take credit for but I think we certainly have helped. And as a resident of Lancaster, I'm delighted to see, more and more stores and art galleries and restaurants and so forth.
I was talking with your archivist. And he's said y'all have had. He's asked you one time, should we have a lunch and learn? And you said, go for it.
Yeah. So
I mean, 82 of them or something.
So Brent Bergen started this lunch and learn program, and I thought, we'll get some of our faculty to come in and give a talk, and we'll have a handful of people here having eating sandwiches and watching this, and it did start off small. We were in a classroom, and then it started getting more and more crowded, and we had to move it into one of our larger galleries, and so. One Friday a month, we have a guest speaker come in, and Brent has managed to bring in just some wonderful speakers talking about Native American history and culture or regional history and culture. So we've had December I gave a talk on Christmas light decorations. That's just sort of a side interest of mine.
But you're still, this is a place where people can come for excitement and learning.
Yeah,
sometimes serious and sometimes lighthearted.
Right. So this year we're doing our Native American Studies Week, as I said, our 15th mm-hmm. one, and we're focusing on Native American humor, satire, and parody. And we have a couple of artists whose work we're exhibiting who are just delightful, you know, sometimes biting satire, sometimes a little whimsical, but very entertaining and thought-provoking. And you know, we put this together because we were thinking, one of the things we want to try to do is dispel stereotypes. And there's a stereotype of Native Americans being very somber and very, very serious mm-hmm. And not laughing, having a good time. But some of the funniest people I know are Native, and some of the best jokes I've ever heard, which I can't repeat to you or won't, were told to me by Native folks.
And I think you're having one of the lectures is on tricksters.
Yeah,
or
I'm actually giving the talk on tricksters, yeah. And I'm trying to decide whether it's going to be a PG or an R or maybe an X, because some of the trickster stories can be just downright vulgar, but hilarious. So.
Well, as we said, that we're digging clay, earthy people.
Yeah, I think it's earthy humor. Yeah, yeah.
But then you're an archaeologist. Mm-hmm. Y'all apparently, I was up here before, I was careful not to touch or trying not to touch, and there was this table with all this stuff on it, and I went, good heavens, where's the camera?
Yeah, that exhibit is traveling now, but Chris Judge put together an exhibit called Share a Little of That Human Touch, borrowing from a Bruce Springsteen lyric, I think. But he specifically wanted an exhibit that was hands-on. And so he made sure to get things that you couldn't really break, but the grinding stones and spear mm-hmm. points and so forth that are just thousands of years old. But you can come in, handle it, and grind something with it if you want. We're working more and more toward more hands-on exhibits, more interactive exhibits, because we know that there's only so much walking, looking. Mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's and it's an interesting thing that none of us here have museum training or tourism training, so it's been quite a learning experience. I know when we moved into the building here, I had to get my late wife to help me pick out furniture, mm-hmm. and I said to her, I have a PhD in folklore. Why? Yeah. How am I qualified to decide on couch colors? But.
Well, the price is certainly enticing.
Yes,
because it's free to come.
Yeah, it is. It is free. Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And this is a remarkable exhibit of Catawba pottery. And if someone wanted to have one of y'all, if a group wanted to come, can you give them a talk on the pottery?
Yeah. We can do different things. So we have tours from preschoolers all mm-hmm. the way up to senior groups. And, we can tailor our tours based on who the group.
So it doesn't have to be just a self-guided experience.
No. Mm-hmm. We have our faculty here who from time to time can give tours or do give tours if they're not in class or and so forth. And we also have Katie Schull and Elizabeth Streeter and a few other staff members who are also
well-versed.
Yeah.
And then what we came today was Nancy Baskett mm-hmm. of Cherokee Heritage, who through the South Carolina Arts Commission, mm-hmm. I think has been given a program to have been here. I think she's been giving workshops and then exhibits and through the auspices of the Arts Commission. Yeah. But then you had talked about the state recognized tribes mm-hmm. who have been kind of short shrift.
Right.
But y'all have a room dedicated to mm-hmm. them, I believe.
Right.
And you're cycling them through. Tell me a little about that. How you're trying to honor them or give them a chance to tell their story.
Sure. We have several galleries and one of the galleries that is named in honor of Duke Energy because they were very supportive of our developing the program and acquiring the pottery and so forth. But that space has become reserved for state recognized tribes and what Brittany Taylor Driggers has done in curating these exhibits is basically told, as I said, with the Gene Norris story, the South Carolina Cherokee, where we want you to tell your story. Well, we've designated that space as the place where they can tell their story. And so some of these tribal groups have put together their own exhibits, and they come up and they send us, or they bring up their artifacts and their photos and, you know, whatever it is they
want to
display.
Examples of their culture.
Right. And then they work with our folks here to create an exhibit that's, Brittany is wonderful with arranging things so they're visually appealing. And it's a wonderful partnership, and it's a great opportunity for them to tell their story and for the rest of us to learn about our own state a little bit more.
As a folklorist based here, do you take that opportunity to try to compile information that can be added to your archives?
We've been doing oral history work with the different tribes since we started. If they're here, we try to interview them while they're here. We also go out and do interviews in the field and the materials that they share with us, you know, whenever possible, we get copies of them, put them mm-hmm. in the archive here so that we can, and we do have a good collection of materials on the state tribes as well here. And that's something that we're developing more and more of, but anyone who's interested in the Catawba or the PD or the Beaver Creek or the Cherokees in South Carolina or Edisto or any of these other groups, Natchez, Cusos, they can come here to do research.
When I was eating lunch with Chris and Nancy, they were talking about how there was an insularity among some of the Native yeah. Americans for a while because of discrimination problems like that. And do you feel like that there's been a shift in the public attitude towards them to some extent that maybe makes it easier for them to share their stories?
Well, the relationship between non-Native and Native communities, is particularly in the South, is a curious one in some ways, because there is a fascination, I think, among a lot of non-white folks with Native culture, but it's not with contemporary Native life. It's with a sort of Hollywood version,
a romanticized,
or history, romanticized version. And I think there's probably some feeling of commonality between those who are sort of those lost cause, Southerners. A recognition of that, a similarity to the Native plight in dealing with the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, both groups see the federal government as a threat.
Yeah.
But it's not completely based in reality, in real time. Obviously, things have improved for Native communities,
mm-hmm.
But there's still a lot of there are a lot of stereotypes that they have to deal with, and a lot of romanticization, as you mentioned,
mm-hmm.
But also invisibility. There's that sense of, oh, you're still here.
Wow.
kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. You told me we had 14 I mean, I was just stunned,
and it's not something that's mm-hmm. well known. It should be, we're working to make that known, but it's really something that every citizen should know, and we should be taught that, and we should share
because these people are still
yeah
I mean they're South Carolinians
yeah
they're right here with us.
Well, and they're you know, Native history is shaped the state's history and the country's history, of course, but the state's history so much that to understand, you know, where you live and who you are, if you're from here, you've got to know something about the Native influence as well.
Do you, what do you think that the students who come through here, how do you think they're changed, and what attitudes do you think they take out to the general public with them? What is your hope?
Well, and from what I hear from student comments on evaluations or just talking to them and so forth, a lot of it is what we were just talking about of that, oh, I didn't realize, or I didn't know. I didn't know this was here. I didn't know this was in, mm-hmm. In terms of the Catawba pottery, I didn't know this was in my backyard. And so that's gratifying to know that they're learning. As a teacher, it's always nice to know that students are learning. And I think, you know, they gain a greater appreciation for the diversity of the region and thinking about diversity in a different way. I think particularly in this state, in the South in general, we tend to think in terms of literally black and white, but
yes,
also ethnically black
mm-hmm.
and white. When historically that Native influence was so, so important. And then today, of course, you know, we have populations from all around the world
yes.
here. And I think, you know, the first step is to open your eyes to see that it's not just black and white, that there's a rainbow of influences and history and culture here. And so I'm hoping, you know, even if they don't necessarily carry on with an interest in Native American history and culture, I'm hoping their minds are expanded a little bit to see, you know, the diversity around them and the role that all of these different ethnic and cultural groups have.
And to bring that into the conversation for the rest of their lives with everyone they interact with.
Yeah,
I would think that's what we hope happens when people are educated,
that we have
different ideas.
And getting back to the Catawba pottery, I mean, I've said before that it's a shame that not every student in South Carolina knows about this tradition, because Catawba Indian pottery is the oldest continuous pottery tradition, ceramics tradition in North America. The Catawbas were making pottery before the native folks in the Southwest. I mean, this pottery was made and continues to be made by the descendants of those people who lived around
the
river.
And this is the oldest tradition of pottery in the United States of America.
In the United States.
That's pretty remarkable.
And it's right here. Mm-hmm. And it's taught, as I said.
And it's contemporary.
Yeah.
It's still happening.
Well, it's timeless, too. Yeah. I mean, it's tall. It's passed on from, you know, parent to child, you know, aunt or uncle to niece or nephew. You learn it at the feet of a potter, usually a master potter. The pottery is made from clay that's harvested from the Catawba River. If you use store-bought clay, it's not Catawba pottery, even if it's made by Catawba. It has to be made by Catawba as well to be Catawba pottery. But the clay is harvested from around here. It's fired in an open pit. There's not a kiln that's used in it. There are no glazes that are used
on it. Wheels.
No wheels.
Hand-built.
And yet, it's beautiful, and some of the potters amazing work. I think you've seen the work of Caroline Sanders up front there, and Caroline and Chief Harris, Bill Harris is the chief of the Catawba now. Those both of them and a few others, they just make beautiful, incredible work. I'll tell you a quick story though about a piece here, and thinking in terms of what we would like to do in terms of telling the story of Native Americans in South Carolina and telling the story of Catawba pottery. There's a piece in our gallery up here. It's a piece by Sarah Ayers. It's a jug that sits about two feet tall. Has head lugs, what are called King Hagler lugs, or sometimes Indian head lugs. They're a profile of a clearly Indian leader that look like handles on it, and it's cross hatched in a archaic style. Sarah Ayers passed away probably about 25 years ago, but she was Catawba. She lived mostly in Lexington County, and she was a prolific potter. Just made pottery. She and her husband Fox made pottery all the time, and did incredible work. So a few years ago, it's after I'd started here, a friend of mine, Paul Matheny at the State Museum, sent me an email with a video clip of an interview with Barack Obama, and Meredith Vieira was interviewing Barack Obama. This was during the first vote for the ACA, for Obamacare.
Oh, all right.
And so she was interviewing him about that. Mm-hmm. And he sent me this link, and I started watching. I thought, what is he sending
me? Why is he sending me
this? We don't talk politics.
I work for the state. I have insurance.
Yeah, I don't know what this is. And I think I wrote back and I said, what is this? And he said, you know, stop it at 6 minutes in, or 6:04, whatever. And so I'm watching it, and lo and behold, they're in the White House library doing this interview. And the camera's shooting Meredith Vieira. And over her shoulder, sitting on a table, is a piece of pottery that looks exactly like the one that we have front.
In the White House.
In the White House. And I thought, I wrote him back and said, is that a Sarah Ayers piece? And he said, I think so. And so it took me a little time, but I got in touch with the White House decorator, the person who decorated the library. And he emailed me back and told me that during, I think, the first Bush, H.W. Bush administration, they redid the White House library. And they went over to the Museum of the American Indian, and they gathered a handful of pieces to put in for decoration. The only piece of art from this side of the Mississippi was that piece of Catawba Indian pottery by Sarah Ayers.
Yeah. No.
And I remember at the time thinking,
and our tradition here is older than anywhere else in the country.
And every student in a South Carolina school should know that there's a piece by Sarah Ayers in the White House Library. And just a caveat to the story, about a year ago, I was watching a comedy show, and they were showing a clip of Fox News following Donald Trump through on a tour of the White House, and, sure. he goes into the White House library, and it was comical, I think, because he walks into the library and Melania just happens to be in there at the time reading.
Sure,
you know? So it's very staged.
Yeah. Just so staged.
But I saw that and I found the video and kept pausing, and I couldn't find the piece anywhere.
Oh,
so I called Lindsey Graham's office. And this was during the most recent Obamacare vote, where the one where McCain
was the
tiebreaker. And so they were in the middle of all that. And so I called and I said, I have a question.
So their phones were running off the hook.
Yeah, I said, it has nothing to do with healthcare. Uh-huh. I just want to know if this piece is still in the library.
There.
Well, they called me back less than 24 hours. Somebody called me back and said, yeah, it's still there.
But when you think that all of the Native American people we had in our part of the world, east of the Mississippi, that was the only piece represented. Yeah.
That's amazing.
So we do need to improve our telling of this story.
Yeah, yeah.
And giving credit to the people and importance to the people.
Yeah, in fact, when I first saw that clip with Meredith Vieira, it was during the time when Governor Sanford's Appalachian Trail issue was going on.
Yeah.
And I remember at the time thinking, I wish this were the news. I wish everyone knew about this pottery
Sarah
and not
Ayers
this others.
Yeah, after 2,500 years of history being still expressed as through someone who's from that tradition and culture.
Yep, and we have a beautiful piece identical to that.
A beautiful story. Well. So, thank you so much for what y'all are doing here.
Well, thank you.
And for letting us come today. And it's been a joyful experience.
Well, we're delighted to have you, and please come back, and your listeners and viewers, please, let them know that we would love to have them come in.
I will do that.
We have a number of upcoming events and exhibits and programs and
so just go to your you would just go to Native American Studies Lancaster, and I bet you've got
if you go to the USC Lancaster website. Or I think even if you go to the sc.edu, the USC website, you type in Native American Studies Center, it's going to take you right to our page.
And I mean, I have picked up 6 or 7 flyers up front of upcoming things you have. And you have pottery sales of, crafts
and things. We have on the 21st of
But every year, April, you, at certain
have,
times.
So 3 or 4 times a year,
I think that's
we have
wonderful.
Pottery sales. And along with other artwork by Native artists.
Because
we have Native, watercolor painters.
Sure.
It's not all traditional art, but a lot of it is that, as I said, that textbook traditional art.
Yeah, but on our show, Making It Grow, we're always promoting certified South Carolina, and South Carolina specialty products. I mean, we need to support the entrepreneurs and be they artists at growing food, or artists at making pickle, or artists at producing artwork and crafts.
Yeah.
We need to support them. By knowing about what's happening here, this is another way that we can do that.
And we try to do that. And the South Carolina Arts Commission has been very supportive of our
efforts.
They're
very proud
of y'all. The Humanities Council has been supported in the past. It's wonderful that we can do this. And I'm delighted to work with these folks and support this community. My colleague, Brooke Bauer, I don't know if you met her, but Brooke is a Catawba historian. She's a Catawba Indian and a historian of Catawba history and culture. And she's our liaison to
it's
Catawba
living
folks.
History.
And we've kept it alive, and they seem pleased with what we're doing. When we hear that the Native communities are happy with us, that's the most important thing for us. And so we're delighted to have you here.
Thank you. We're proud of you and what you're doing.
Thanks.